Here we are. Somebody interrupted our music. We don't know who that was. Hey, listen, next week we're going to be fundraising. Membership drive. You go to Iceland. You didn't know we were going to Iceland.
Yeah, I did know we were going to Iceland. I'm planning to go make the trip myself. If I win.
Right? Yeah.
And starting next Monday is the membership drive. And our theme is that CIUT is an island of audio independence. And that's what we need.
A nice turn of phrase.
Independence. Independence from received thought. From the powers that be. Yeah. And you can participate right now in the early bird draw. Go to CIUT.fm. And then, of course, you get an opportunity at some early bird prizes as well.
And mention the Taylor Report. I believe we may have Renee Mugenzi online. Are you there, Renee?
Yes, I'm here.
Oh, wonderful. Thank you for joining us, Renee. I'm going to tell everyone you're available on Twitter, Rwandans. Be sure to put the S in there. Rwandans Rights, and you're with the Global Campaign for Rwandan Human Rights, and you've taken on a big mission. You're calling for at a very wonderful website, by the way. I congratulate you on it. The recognition of crime of genocide against the Hutu population, and the Hutu population of Rwanda, Hutu population of Burundi, and of the Congo, if I understand. Tell me about this initiative.
Yes. Thank you for having me. The recently on the 7th of October 2009, we shared a declaration that is saying population experience a genocide in the Great Rift regions, which means in Rwanda and the DRC.
Mm-hmm.
And what happened, a group of experts, advocates, survivors of that genocides, and the lawyers, as well as civil liberty activists, came together and been looking at for a number of years a lot of evidence which is available about those crimes which are committed against the Hutu people, and look at evidences which are available, and look at the UN reports, and interviewed a lot of survivors as well as some of the killers who were in the Congo and in Rwanda during that time. And also we come up to the conclusion, also looking at the definition of the genocide.
Yes.
And we come up that the conclusion that actually genocide against Hutu population have been committed in Rwanda and in Zaire, in former Zaire, which is currently DRC.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm very glad with this initiative, I have to say. I want our listeners to know it's a very rigorous effort you've made. You've gone to great pains with your documentation and also the legal framework. And I've been involved with the subject myself for some time, and it has always been striking to me the confusion over language. The government of Rwanda insists on a term which they say the Tutsi genocide, and which means they exclude the possibility of Hutu genocide. In the United Nations, when they had the tribunals in Arusha, Tanzania, they said a genocide against Tutsi and moderate Hutus, which I thought was a little strange. They were Hutus. I don't know where the word moderate comes in. And the question is, who committed these acts? Well, tell us about, for example, in setting the stage here, there's the 1948 Geneva Convention, Article 2. What is that about, and how does that drive direct your work?
Actually, coming back to what you said initially,
mm-hmm.
The government of Rwanda have created the history of Rwanda, which is in line with their politics, which is, say, part of Rwandan history, which was about the genocide against Tutsi, which occurred in 1994. But they just preferred or decided to to not mention a genocide against the Hutus, which occurred in Rwanda from 1990 until late 1997. Mm-hmm. And also the UN, which is supposed to help Rwanda to survivors to get their justice, they only focused on the genocide against Hutu, against the Tutsi. And mm-hmm. despite that, they had enough information and they have enough evidences, they decided to ignore them. Then they focused on one particular genocide which occurred in Rwanda. That's why we come up with. Mm-hmm. This declaration so that we can campaign that all international community and especially the UN and consider this crime and do the right actions. Yes. In relation to this convention, in 1948, there was the United Nations Genocide Convention, which defined genocide, mm-hmm. and it created a condition of how a crime would be amount to a genocide. So, and mm-hmm. they had five
elements. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So that's why we look at the evidence which is existing about the killings of the Hutu populations in DRC and in Rwanda, mm-hmm. and we compare them against this definition. Yes. And then we realize that actually this genocide against the Hutu have been committed, and it should be known. It should be known to the international community. It should be known to the government. It should be known to the Rwandan population. Well, to the humanity.
And for the various members of the United Nations to do their duty and assess this and do take the appropriate steps. We're speaking, by the way, to Rene Mugenzi at Rwandans' Rights, Global Campaign for Rwandan Human Rights. There's also a site, hutugenocide.org. These are, by the way, very. I'm impressed with the work that's gone into this. There are UN reports, are there not? And, of course, there's the writings of Judy Reaver, Professor Renschens, and others, documenting some of the clear cases of massacres of people based on their ethnicity. Can you talk about that? The UN, the tracking, so-called tracking report, and there were also, I recall, and the name escapes me at the moment, but work done in Zaire, Congo now, saying that the elements of genocide were there in the killing of civilians, Rwandan civilians. Those are UN reports, right?
Oh, yes. Yes, there was a large and detailed report in 2010 called the UN Mapping Report.
I'm sorry, which, mapping, I said tracking, yeah.
So which detailed the of crimes that have been committed in Congo and how they were committed and who committed them, mm-hmm. and those crimes amount to genocide. Despite that, at the end of the report said that a court of law will be needed to clarify if those crimes were genocide. But you know the details of the crime they are really in line with the definition of the United Nations Genocide Conventions. So the UN, what is very surprising, that report had a number of recommendations which they want, you know, they requested to be implemented, but the new UN had not implemented any of those recommendations, which is very unfortunate. The UN as an international organization, mm-hmm. they should have, you know, they have got a convention which they should implement, but for this specific crime against the Hutu, they have been. It have been very politicized, and there's a lot of rubies back doors, rubies, which which prevented the UN to do the, you know, the obligation.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why we're issuing this report, so we can pressure the UN international community and some influential government, especially those in the Security Council, to do, you know, to do what they have to do, you know, because the Hutu community, they are member of the humanity, you know, they should be treated as any other community on our planet. So they should, that's why they should get the justice and the recognition.
Yes.
Of their experience, and also the Rwandan people itself as a community, this Hutu genocide should be recorded as an historical fact, one of the history, not only the history of Rwandans, also the history of Africa or the history of humanity, should not be swept under the carpet and forgotten.
Mm-hmm. Again, it's Rene Mugenzi, and it is at Rwandans' Rights, Global Campaign for Rwandan Human Rights, and there's also a site, HutuGenocide.org. It's here in Canada, it has certainly been a kind of important development in that Judy Reaver, highly respected journalist, has written a book in praise of blood. She has an awful lot of research in that book. Give me your comments on it. I assume that is of some help if people want to understand your case.
Yes, indeed. Judy Reaver research and book has immensely contributed to this research and this awareness of what happened to the Hutu people and what experience they had, and it's because in the research was very she went looking at a lot of evidence which were available in detail, and really it has been very useful in our research as well, because we use a lot of her information from her and her materials in our own research and on our own report. That's why we are very grateful to her, because contributed.
The book won awards, a very highly respected work, and with a tremendous documentation, which your work here elaborates more. Maybe we could acquaint people with some of the incidents that you detail, which would make up, if a prosecutor were looking at this. The one I remember most is that got the world's attention was the massacre at Kibeho. Can you talk about that? What happened there?
Oh, the Kibeho massacres, which occurred in May, the 22nd of May 1995, was internal displaced refugee camps in south west of Rwanda. There were been refugees, mainly children and women and sick and elderly, and one particular that particular day, the Rwandan Patriotic Front, which became the current Rwandan government army, they came and they surrounded the refugee camp. They killed them. They really shot them. Without any discrimination, that they were, whoever was there, they kill until they run up of bullets.
Mm-hmm.
There were UN peacekeeping who were present at the time, especially Australian peacekeeping mission were there, and some of few Zambian peacekeeping soldiers were there. They're witnesses, and they also took pictures. Also, one of the two of the Australian soldiers who were present at the time, they wrote books which they detailed what they saw at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And also, there's a British colonel who was there as well.
Mm-hmm.
He took very important, very, very threatening pictures, which they are available online. We're online. It's also, we are grateful for all those people who managed to to have those evidence, so that the history will be able to remember them. Yeah. Without them, we will not have known what has happened.
People said one detail of that, as I recall, and by the way, I interviewed the authors, those two soldiers from Australia. They were still in shock at what they had seen. And again, that was largely ignored here. Thank goodness your work will perhaps bring the matter up again. But I believe a Canadian officer, that one who had succeeded General Dallaire, attempted to count the dead, and they interrupted his count, would not let him continue.
That was experience of the British colonel who was there trying to count. He came to our memorial event, Kibeho memorial event, where a few years ago when we were commemorating 15 years anniversary. Mm-hmm. And he came, he told us that he'd been counting bodies. When he reached the 4,000, he was stopped. And he was not only tired, he was stopped by the soldiers, the Rwandan government soldiers. And he believed that he only counted about half, so which means there were about 8,000 deaths. But mm-hmm. for the Rwandan government, they say only 300 people died. Mm-hmm. And they just reprimanded one soldier who had been put in prison for 1 or 2 weeks, and then he was released. Mm-hmm. But that was only because there was international pressure saying that.
They were embarrassed, they
should do something.
Unfortunately, the political support for Kagame was so strong. I know that he has an apologist in America named Philip Gurevich, who can get time on CNN any time he wishes to support all the actions. But that camp had been in existence for almost a year when this action happened.
Yes, the camp was established when refugees were moving from the other part of Rwanda, moving away from the RPF advancement, and so then when they reached there, they formed the camp. So that camp have been there from 1994, July 1994. So that camp have been there for a long time. The people there were not armed, were vulnerable people. People could not walk and go in the Congo. They stay in that part of the mm-hmm. Rwanda. The majority of them, as I said, the children, the women, and the elderly, and many sick, and they really killed in a very inhumane. Situations. This really, when we hear what happened there, you know, it's very horrible story about the experience of the people.
Well, I can recall, very few
survived.
Yeah, on this program, we were talking to the Australian soldier who said it was so brutal. He saw a lone woman, a Rwandan woman, standing. And a soldier walked up to him, and he said he thought he would save her life by being there, being present. And he said the soldier looked at him and smiled and then shot her right in front of him, I don't think he'll recover from seeing that.
I think it's Terry Pickard. He told us the same story in our memorial event. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, he's not with us anymore. 2 years ago, he left. He passed away. He was still traumatized for those events 20 years after. Mm-hmm. He was still has not recovered from what he experienced in Kibeho.
Yeah. By the way, people should know. I mean, they don't understand the situation there. At that time, there were two leaders. One was Sesenda Shonga, the other Faustin Twegiri Mungu. They were in the interim government. After Kibeho, they decided they had better leave. My understanding is that they objected to what anybody could see and realized their own lives were in danger simply because they objected.
Yes, they were in part of a government which were killing people, and most of those killings, they were not aware of what is happening, and also trying to impose that to be against those killings. It was very dangerous for them. Mm-hmm. So I think that's why they had to leave.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, Sesenda Shonga, they pursued him in Kenya. They assassinated him.
Yeah. Murdered him in Nairobi. We're speaking to Rene Mugenzi, and he is with this is Twitter, @Rwandans Rights Global Campaign for Rwandan Human Rights is also a very good site, HutuGenocide.org. This is a very important project, quite well researched. In the last portion here, people need to understand there were Hutu, Burundian Hutus who died in great numbers in the period 94 through 96, and also this is somewhat new to me, the Hutu, there are Hutus in Zaire, Congo. They're not, you know, not of Rwanda, but they in that state. What happened? Maybe you could tell us, for example, Tingi Tingi, and just yes. If you could include the reference to the Burundian Hutus.
Yes, well, what happened with our research and the UN and the other international NGOs, other researchers found that when the Rwandan Patriotic Front, the Rwandan Army, came to Congo, they started to kill Rwandan refugees in the refugee camps in the south and north Kivu. Then because the Burundi had previous, they had issues before, which meant that they were Burundi refugees in the DRC, in Zaire at that time. Mm-hmm. So they also killed, also massacred thousands of Burundian refugees who were in the Congo. Mm-hmm. And when the Rwandan, that Rwandan army and their allies from IFDL, when they reached North Kivu, and North Kivu had a large Hutu Congolese population, they also select them from the local other tribe, they massacre them. So they will kind of hunt Hutu, whoever is the Hutu, you know, really hunted, on, you know, they hunted and killed. And that the local, it reached a point where the local other tribes were hiding local Hutus, or other Hutus were, you know, changing their tribe, will come, they were saying that they were from this tribe and, not this tribe, not Hutu mm-hmm. tribe, in order to save their lives. Mm-hmm. So they were really surprised. They thought there was a war between Rwandans, but they later they realized as was a war, it was a plan or mm-hmm. attention to terminate the Hutu population. Wherever they will be, they were coming from.
Yeah. This is Rene Mugenzi. By the way, I would just from my own work and observing this over the years, I've always been pained that you just mentioned those people were in United Nations refugee camps, allegedly under an international recognized authority to be protected, and those camps were bombarded with artillery shells. And mm-hmm. When we're doing in any proceedings in the future, trying to recognize responsibility, I would call out every last one of those Western observers who just left and allowed those people to be murdered. The United Nations did not do its duty. It permitted that murder to happen.
And after when they murdered, they didn't try to find out. They tried to find out what happened, but they didn't try to find to bring to the justice or to
They didn't run to the Security Council to say, put a stop to this. The Rwandan army has crossed the border and is bombarding United Nations identified refugee camps. Yeah. Instead, it was treated as a celebration because they said they were looking for Interahamwe. So they permitted that dirty excuse to destroy the people.
Yeah, that's...
I'm sorry to be preachy, but having followed it and read your Rwandans' rights, the role of people who were supposed to protect is very... It ought to be called out, because here we are in the Western world, Belgium, United States, France, Canada, all turned their eyes away while this happened.
So. Yes. And 25 years later, the survivors of the genocide, the Rwandans in the Congo forest, were still calling for their protection. They're running around, they're still being hunted by the Rwandan army, and mm-hmm. they are proxy rebellion groups in DRC. So they're still there, some survivors who are still calling for their protection 25 years on.
They're rights under international law. Rene McKenzie, we're very appreciative that you could be with us. Rwandans Rights, at Rwandans Rights. And we look forward to following your work, and we will come back to it because I think it's going to succeed. Thank you very, very much.
Thank you for having me. Thank you.
Bye-bye.